This is Just Talking Sam Podcast, y'all. Just Talking Sam Podcast. Just put your name on it. If you don't talk about it, be about it.
I don't know this till like right now. Seriously.
You're on iTunes, y'all.
But it's obvious, if y'all are listening, we never write this out.
Hey, what's up? What's up? It's your man Sam, host of Just Talk with Sam podcast. Just Talk with Sam podcast. Man, we got a great one. A really, really great one. I feel good about this one, man. I got a chance to sit down with this podcast with a person who has such a remarkable story, who has a great story. I want to bring it to you. That person is Namir Abu Nassar. Yes, he's currently on his world tour. And we got a chance to sit down and talk with him. We talked about his comedy, his upbringing. We talked about a lot of things while he made his Detroit stop on the world tour. Either way, he was here. He sat down. We talked. And this guy is such a great dude. And he unites audiences of nations. Unite nations. Under his comedy mantra of unity, no politics, no religion, and one love, this guy is a remarkable dude, and we get a chance to chop it up. I'm kind of like falling over myself while I read this because I know how good of a podcast is. So before we get into the podcast, I just want to kind of speed through these sponsors a little bit. No disrespect, but I really want to get into this podcast. So I want to say thank you. Please visit the show and all things related to the Just Talk with Sam podcast can be found at samshownation.com. By going to Sam Show Nation, you are the epicenter of all things Just Talk with Sam podcast. One thing I want to thank all the people who have. You can always go to samshownation.com. This has always been a crowdsourced podcast. This is for the people, by the people. So go to samshownation.com. You can hit the donate button on the homepage, your current promotions page. I don't spend a dime of the donation money. That goes into making the podcast a bigger, better entity that is the podcast. And I want to thank those who have donated so far. And those who want to in the future, you can. I mean, it's all right there for you. So thank you guys for doing so. Also, the people who want to go off and show their love to the podcast, you can always go to samshownation.com. Hit the store link and you can pick up whatever Just Talk with Sam swag you want, whether that be t-shirts, whether that be stickers, whether that be my iPhone or my Apple people. You can always get the iPhone app by doing that. Any Apple device you have, you are first in line for any podcast that shows up from Just Talking with Sam. You can subscribe, rate, and review your favorite episodes. You can talk amongst the community. You can talk about what you like, what you don't like right there on iTunes. It's all great for you if you go that way. But my people who are not Apple people, you can always go to samshownation.com, hit the podcast link. And by hitting the podcast link, whatever device you have, we have something for you. Whether you're Android, Windows, BlackBerry, Cricket. I'm really running out of phone sources at this point. But we have the Stitcher app for those people, the TuneIn app, the RSS feed. As I said again, the Apple feed, or since you're right there at samshownation.com, you can listen to your favorite podcast by hitting the podcast link right there on the website. So by doing that, we got a few promotions, and then we're going to get into some comedy, and then we get a chance to sit down with our buddy Namir Abu Nassar. First sponsor is the good folks, new sponsor actually, at U.S. Mattress. U.S. Mattress is among the largest American mattress retailers here in the country, and they're served all across America. They make selecting a mattress pretty easy. Look, I got to be honest with you. As a person who did some mattress shopping lately, it's kind of hard to shop for a mattress. You go into the store, you got to pretend you sleep, get your mattress. What we offer here, go to samshownation.com, click the U.S. mattress link, and you get a chance to shop using their custom, comfort rating. Very competitive pricing from brands you know and trust, like Stearns & Foster, Sealy, Certain Simmons, Springer, Tempur-Pedic, just to name a few. You can order right there online by going to samshownation.com, clicking that link, and it's free delivery on everything if you are within the continental United States and Canada. Yeah, Canada. You guys are cool, too. So, free delivery on everything they have. Their mattress, and each mattress come with their mattress guarantee. Period, point blank. You can exchange your mattress. You have 100 days after the delivery. You can exchange it. You got 100 days. You can test it out. You can sleep on it. You can get down on it. You can lay on it. You can watch TV on it. Whatever you got to do in 100 days to test out your mattress. U.S. Mattress got you covered. So please go to samshownation.com, click the U.S. mattress link under the current promotions page, and go from there. So, there you are. The next sponsor is the good folks at Walmart. Yeah, Walmart. Walmart knows spring, and Walmart also knows it's where America's list get done. And they got a bunch of handy tips on how you get the job done right. Go to samshownation.com, click that promotions link, and click the Walmart link. And they got a lot of stuff that can help you out with some spring cleaning, whether you're starting a new project. They got it all covered for you. You can go right there from Walmart, whether it's cooling, storage garage, tools, water purification, whatever you need, Walmart got you. They got you. So, go to samshownation.com and click that link. They have a bunch of spring rollbacks, mega rollbacks, either rain or shine, that you can save big on home improvement. They offer free shipping on any item over $50. Anything in your cart, you buying anything over $50, whatever your purchase come up, free shipping right to your home. Also, if you stay near Walmart, they offer everyday free in-store pickup. You can go to samshownation.com, order something from Walmart. You can pick it up later on right there at your friendly neighborhood Walmart. It's a win-win for everyone, and they want to help you get the job done right. So go to samshownation.com, earn the current promotions, click the Walmart link, and shop as you normally would. And last, and certainly not least, Amazon.com. On the homepage of current promotions page of samshownation.com, you collect the Amazon banner, and you are going to just go shopping. Whatever purchase you make goes right back to this podcast, but let's face it, it's the internet. You are pretty much going to Amazon anyway. It's almost a guarantee. Almost. So, by going to Amazon.com, you can pick up whatever you need to get. Whether that, some new t-shirts, maybe you're getting ready for your Final Four situation. Maybe you want to, get some music. Maybe you want to I don't know what you're shopping for, but I do know you're going to Amazon. The only thing we actually do, take the detour, go to samshownation.com. Click the Amazon banner on the homepage, the current promotions page, and then from there, shop as you normally would. Well, that's pretty much what I got right now. I'm very excited about this podcast. Get a chance to talk to my buddy Namir. So, before we get into this podcast, I want to play a little bit of his comedy, and we'll jump right into the podcast. So, here we are, podcast with my buddy, Namir Abu Nassar. See you in a few.
Growing up in America is the best place to grow up in the world. It's the best place. It is the best place to grow up as a kid. In America, you can do anything you want as a kid in America. You can play Nintendo. That's all I did. But you can do anything. Guys, like to this day in Lebanon, we don't have electricity 24 hours a day. So imagine little Nimmer. playing Nintendo at 10 years old in Lebanon. I'm playing Super Mario Brothers, and it's hard. Like, I go down the pipe. Go up the pipe. I'm like, yeah. I'm getting the thing. There's the stairs. I run up the stairs. I jump. I'm about to get to the flag. I'm going to win. I'm about to... Electricity cuts. And you're just like... You get... You see, a lot of people blow up in the Middle East because we're frustrated. And this is why. My dad's never satisfied. If you have a Lebanese dad, they're never satisfied. When I told my dad I wanted to be a stand-up comic, I'm sure you can understand. He wasn't exactly enthused at the suggestion. I'm like, Dad, I'm going to be a stand-up comic. Oh, you're going to be a clown. I was like, no, Dad, I'm going to be a stand-up comic. Oh, you're going to stand up and be a clown. Great. I'm like, no, Dad. He's like, not really. He's good. Called my mom. Here, come say hi to your son, the clown. Come. She's like, he's your son, too. I don't have a son. You don't understand the dedication. For years, he bought a horn every time I would come into the house, every single time. Everybody! Everybody! The clown is here. Open the door for his big show. Everybody! Until last year, I made it on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. He was like, this is my son, the comedian. I always said, follow your dreams. But he can't pronounce it right. He's like, my son was on the cover of Throwing Stones. I'm like... Dad, that's the ISIS publication. That's a different magazine father. Because this is my country. Don't bring me back. Don't bring me back. Don't tell me our youth is running out. It's only just begun.
Do you feel a responsibility to use comedy as a tool for change?
So when I get up on that stage, I feel there's a responsibility, not a responsibility, it's an opportunity for me that I have 4,000 people coming here to see me talk for an hour and a half. So to just waste that, for me, is a missed opportunity. But it also adds responsibility that some people might not be prepared to take. Mm-hmm. Right. But I'm ready to take it, and it was one of my main motivations for getting into comedy. My father, when I was growing up, would tell me the quickest way to somebody's heart is through laughter.
Somebody, I gotta say hello to you. Hold on. That's my father.
How long have you guys been going out? Year and a half. And how does it feel that tonight's the night you break up? How does that make you... What's your name, ma'am? Romina, has your relationship been great, or has it been like, has it been fantastic, or has it been like, amazing, or has it been amazing? How has it been? Romina, I need to hear how your relationship has been. Romina, sing to me.
Sing to me, Romina. I wanna hear what you have to say. Welcome to the house of the Lord.
You can say anything with this thing. It's fantastic. It sounds so holy.
Romina, you look so beautiful. Your boyfriend doesn't love you. Kick him in the balls. Kick him in the balls.
Everybody.
Just kick him in the balls. Grab his testicles and make him eat them.
Gas into your house. You don't even think about it. You make a phone call, they pump the gas to your house. It's beautiful. We put the gas in our homes ourselves. We carry highly pressurized propane tanks and we carry them up the stairs, and then we hook up the gas and we wrench the thing. But here's what the Lebanese do that's so gangster. To test if we've set it up correctly, we light a flame of fire and we put it to the connection. My mom was like, if it explodes, you didn't do it correctly. I'm like, thank you, mom. Thank you.
Liverpool to Portsmouth, yeah, that chorus got the crowd screaming. I am Mr. Derek Sacco. Pedal to the metal on a level, I ain't gonna settle for anything less than gold. I ain't gonna meddle around about, end up and down and out. Trying to build since I was a little bit better than my head, and I go running for the fields and the meadows of Valley Valley. And now I wanna hear what your pedal was able to make a fake boy. But I can never make a real boy hard to steal. I ain't gonna stop until I do it, but really gonna give him a number when I was told to do it. Then I get a back up on the pen, I get a fresh from the back. Then bumps your uncle, my fucking feeling, because I've got the willpower and the potential. And I've got the credentials, all of the essentials. But I get stressed from my beat, it rises. But I'm never gonna stop unless I need to get rich.
We're here with, I gotta say it, the Lebanese king of comedy
himself in the flesh. In the flesh,
Nimmer. Thanks for just coming to be on the podcast, Matt. I know you're super busy. I know you're doing a lot of stuff in Metro Detroit, but hell, you're on a world tour.
Yes, sir.
Before we get into
First of all, thank you for having me on the show.
Oh man,
thank you very
Anytime.
Much. I really
before
appreciate it.
We get into all of this before we get into your story, which is why I'm here in the first place. You have a remarkable story. All your social media, man. Just all Nimmer, everything, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead, whenever you're ready. We do it at the start.
Nimmer Comedy, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, my website, it's all the same, Nemr Comedy. And Nimmer, which is my name, which is going to be weird to a lot of people who aren't Lebanese, is an Arabic word, and it means tiger. So that's
okay.
That's why my poster for my new show is what I intended to be half tiger, half man,
uh-huh.
And then somebody saw... When I first posted it online, this is how great Lebanese people are. When I first posted it online, the first comment from a Lebanese guy was, "Did you fall asleep on a barbecue grill?"
Oh, nice. Yeah, see, I didn't... Honestly, on the drive here, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I see the tiger now.
Yeah, but
I immediately went to the, like, damn, he got his ass kicked.
Oh, yeah, he got mauled.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the case. Like, I have some people here in America who are like, why are you mauled by a leopard? And
like,
I like that they tied in the leopard mauling because when you get mauled by leopard, it leaves skin grafts in its pattern of its skin, according to these people. But it was all confusing. But the fact that it raises the question was good because I wanted people to – the point of this was for people to know what my name is and pronounce it and also to understand that it means tiger and stuff. So it was kind of like a branding thing to the name of the show.
Well, it ended up looking like a branding thing.
Literally.
A little branding
thing. And we left the barbecue, so it all works.
mad. Like, one thing I didn't know that's different from, like, social media mm-hmm. than seeing you in the flesh, you are a tall dude.
Yeah.
Like the YouTube do you no justice, man. How tall are you, man?
I'm 6'4".
All right, you're running point.
Teetering on 6'5". I am. I'm telling you, I'm trying.
Like, you a tall dude, man, because, yeah. like, I'm... See, like, on the videos, it looks like, granted, you're in front of these big crowds, and I looked at some of the stuff, I think this is Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, yeah, that's an old one, yeah.
It was an old one, yeah. because I tried to do a little research.
I appreciate that,
I don't
man.
Do a lot, because I don't want it to make it seem like I'm reading Google to you.
Yeah, of course not.
But, like, I do enough where it's just kind of like, okay, let's see. This, honestly, we have very little rules on this podcast, but... the two major rules of is we're friends or fans of the people who get a mic. And I'm looking at you. I'm like, all right, Lebanese King Comedy, what's up? And I'm like, all right, you're a funny dude. But I'm like,
oh, God.
But I'm but like, when you open the door, I'm like, God damn, what the fuck happened?
He's grown since the street.
I know, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, and that is probably the single, the two single comments that I get the most in my life are, you're much taller than I thought you would be. And a lot of times people come up and say, you know, especially Arabs, when I was in the Middle East, the most comment I would get, they would come out and say, you know, I came to the show and I really didn't expect it to be this good. And it's always this weird compliment where I'm like, why didn't you? Why? But it's because a lot of people have been disappointed by the comedy in that region and stuff for years and years and years. So the moniker, I had to kind of break through the stereotype that if you're going to do comedy, it's not going to be that good to begin with. So it was, you know, that was back when I was in the Middle East. Now in the U.S., it's skyrocketing.
Hold on, but we're not going to just fast forward that because originally, you're from San Diego, correct?
Yes, I mean, I grew up, I was born in Lebanon.
Uh-huh.
And when I was 2.5 years old because of war and whatnot, my parents, we immigrated to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed there till I was almost 11 years old. And then we went back to, we went to San Diego. And then we went back to Lebanon where I've lived until about a year and a half ago.
Now, I'm curious, like, when you, look... Just talk to me like a 2-year-old. I am very... I know what I see on news and Al Jazeera about the Middle East.
That's more than I would expect that you should know anyways, to begin with.
That's all I know.
I'm one of the people that will always, every single day, tell you 100%, I hate people who say Americans are misinformed or they don't know about the Middle East. I always say they're not... It's far.
Yeah.
It's they have other things to do, and we're doing a terrible job of telling Americans... What's up? Like, explaining our culture and our people. So, please ask me anything you want. Trust
okay,
me.
All right.
Nobody's ever done a good job of exporting our culture. That's what I'm here for. So, all don't right, worry
and
about it.
That's why I was just kind of like, I don't want to offend.
No, bro. You could say literally some people might think is the most, let's say, quote unquote, uninformed thing in the world. And mm-hmm. I would be more than happy because, in theory, the fact that you even know my country exists for me is more than enough.
Oh, okay, great. All right, first of all, just for the record, you're not the first Lebanese guy I ever met.
Perfect. I would hope not.
I don't want to break that down.
They're all over the place.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I would hope not.
I mean, like, I just want to make that
I
plain.
Would hope not. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
This isn't North Carolina. I get you.
I got you, man. All right. I just want to make that plain.
Yeah.
Dearborn's down the street. Mm-hmm. Ooh, we kidding.
Dearborn's more Lebanese than Lebanon,
yeah.
I tell you.
But, like, when you are in that country, all right. From what I see, you're going to war-torn countries, people mm-hmm. who are dealing with corrupt politics,
yeah.
who are dealing with everything's a serious matter. What makes you, I got to know, what was the thing in you? Like, you know what this country needs? Stand-up comedy.
Bro, it was, let me tell you, first of all, I'm living in Lebanon, and the country is obviously, as I'm sure this much most people know, has been marred by war over many decades.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, outside of Lebanon, you have the entire Middle East, which at the moment is doing much worse than Lebanon had ever done. I mean, if you take into Syria account and Iraq, and you hear about it, Yemen and all these places. Back in 2006, it was following a war that had happened in Lebanon, one of the multiple wars that I had experienced and witnessed. I had been doing stand-up as an amateur thing for many years at that time. You know, it wasn't like a profession. It wasn't my career, you know, in college and university, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized at the time that what we needed in the country wasn't necessarily comedy, because there was comedy. What we needed was an escape where people could go and be together without any politics or religion and just like unity, one love. So that was where my creed came out. No politics, no religion, one love. And I decided, my vision was, if I do a stand-up comedy scene, maybe in 10, 15 years, there'll be a couple clubs here and there. People can go out on a Friday night. They start out in this place. It sets the tone for the evening. And then people go out, and they're not discussing politics or religion. And then over time, in 20, 30 years, it could change.
Okay.
That was my vision. What I didn't expect was the speed at which it blew up for lack of a better term,
okay.
in the Middle East. And the fact that we ended up, within a year, I was doing my first comedy show in front of massive crowds, like a special in front of 2,000 people. And then it was going bigger and better from there because there was a hunger.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Arab people are not war people. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. We have been torn apart by war, which 99% of the time has been out of our control. And I can't tell you how many times I've been in wars in the country, in Lebanon,
yeah.
Where we literally sit and wait for the war to end at home. Like, I'll be playing PlayStation with my friends, and we're having a great time. It's not as if there's a war. Just a bomb goes off, we turn on the news to make sure it's all good, and sometimes you'll see a massacre on TV and people dead in the streets and blood everywhere, and it's just, okay, this is what... It becomes a part of your life. It's not who we are. It's what's put up
on you.
So when I did stand-up comedy, it was no politics, no religion, one love. It was about remembering who we really are. And I say this, I said this the other day, and to be a true Arab, there's only one pillar, two pillars. And that is when you go to somebody's house, you never go empty-handed. And when somebody comes into your house, it becomes their house. That's all I was told growing up. I wasn't told to hate someone because they were Muslim or Christian or Jewish. I'm a Christian.
Right.
And in Lebanon, which I'm very proud of this, we have synagogues, mosques, and churches right next to each other.
Okay.
And this whole theory that conflict has been around for thousands of years is not true. This is recent conflict. This is over resources. This is over oil. This is over financials. So,
I mean, come on, man. We all got that. Because, like, yeah. If you sit down, that's not necessarily here, not necessarily... That's pretty much everywhere you go where... We can take one cool thing,
mm-hmm.
and then we want to put our flavor on it. And by us putting our flavor on it, that starts the conflict.
100%.
And
100%.
And that's where it goes.
100%. And the thing is, the reason that the Middle East has been falling apart, I'm not blaming everybody else.
No.
I'm putting blame on us. What happened is we were divided. What I'm trying to do is bring people together, because once you're together, you cannot be divided. And I'm not taking credit for what I'm saying at all.
No,
I'm just saying that in what happened now in Lebanon is an example of how strong a situation can be if people aren't divided. Syria is on our border. So we share the border with Syria and Israel and the sea. That's basically how we are geographically. Syria, as I'm sure you've heard, has fallen apart completely.
Yeah.
And we've taken in the past 2 years, you might be shocked to know this, in a population of 4 million, that's our country's population, we took in 2 million Syrian refugees.
You guys are the closest ones.
We're the closest ones. We're not talking about 8,000 where there's congressional hearings in America for 8,000 or 12,000.
No, you took in...
We took in 2 million, no problems. And to add to the fact that our country has been effectively, directly targeted by ISIS multiple times. They've tried to destabilize me. The day before the Paris attacks, 56 people were killed in Lebanon. So much stuff happened. I mean, terrorist attacks happen all the time. But the country has not been able to be destabilized because we've been through so much. We've seen through so much. We've become so strong together. No outside threat can touch us. So that's an example that if comedy can help reinforce that culture and spread it throughout the Middle East and, in my opinion, the world, which is what I'm trying to do here, then we will become very effectively immune to these sort of things. You need to be very powerful to stand up to other very powerful people trying to bring you down and exploit your weaknesses.
So what I'm hearing is no heckler can fuck with you.
Oh my God. Very early on, hecklers tried and I put them down so harshly.
It's violent. It wouldn't even come down. Like, you're facing war and threats.
Yeah.
You literally could have several ISIS members in the crowd.
If they did, we would. I tell you, it would turn into a great show where we would take care of business and then continue with the show.
And some guy with a Yo Mama joke just shows up.
No, nobody heckles.
You suck.
You don't. No. That would be the worst. No, I would shut him down completely. Listen, like you said, I've done shows where we had war going on.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So even when I came here, I remember like I'd be meeting with my manager and he'd be like, "Okay, we're gonna do this show, but." You know, are you going to be able to, is it a good environment for you to do a show? Because the timing might be a bit off. And I'm like, Barry, listen, it's,
You can name drop that, that's my guy.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Barry Katz. Shit, I listen to industry standard.
He's been incredible in my corner. Like he's been,
it's not just about name dropping.
It's about literally, recognizing his greatness and how much he's helped me. And the thing that Barry tells me these things, I remember telling him, I was like, Barry, I've done shows during war. I can handle a bit of a bad time. Like, none of the circumstances in America for me are something that are intimidating because I'm like, oh, so it's spring break and there aren't that many people. We'll just hustle a bit harder as opposed to we might die.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? And
remember to wear a helmet.
Remember to wear a helmet. In the show. We've done shows that are underground. When I first started, the first year that I established stand-up, because I established the industry in the Middle East, period, from scratch.
And that's what I want to get at. Like, all right, so you are a movement in the Middle East.
Yeah.
During wartime, during strife, all of this. So the people who come to see your comedy, I would imagine, enjoy it on another level.
Yes.
Because
it has purpose.
It has purpose. It's escapism.
Yeah.
It's everything you need to get away from whatever madness that you personally may be involved 100%. In.
100%. In the first year we did stand-up comedy, there was 14 political assassinations and a civil war. 14 political assassinations doesn't mean they were shot by a sniper that was...
Yeah.
That means they blew up the entire neighborhood. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, the block. Like, people flew. Like, 60 civilians died as a bystander just to make sure they killed that one politician. When that's happening in the first year, and you're doing shows in an area that you're advertising as, it will be underground... And don't come if you feel threatened, but if you need to escape, come on down because I'll be there. Even if there's one of you, I'll be there. When the whole country is shut down because nobody wants to leave their house, but your show packs 600-700 people in a venue that fits 300, that's when you know that there's more than just a want to laugh. There is a need to remember what it is that makes us who we are, because the division isn't us. It's the coming together and the having fun and the being love of life. That's who we are.
Now, what I understand is, like, even though, well, that works, obviously, the only thing close to what we would have in the U.S. to what you have in Lebanon if, like, Trump becomes president, and then that's the only way, like, we will have, you would crush it on two different coasts.
Let me tell you, if Trump becomes president.
You have first-hand experience.
Oh, my God. Look, the disaster.
I got this.
Trump right now, it's, and I talk about this in my new show.
Yeah.
The thing about Trump, about Donald Trump, the day that he announced his candidacy, I was in Los Angeles. I was with a bunch of comedians, and they were joking about Donald Trump.
You should be.
And I said, don't joke, because this guy is literally, in my opinion, most probably going to win. At least the nomination. And they looked at me like I was crazy. I wasn't saying because I want him to win. I'm just as a guy who's seen what he's seen and the perspective that I have, I can recognize one thing, and that is that what he does and what he does very well and that is working well is what worked in the Middle East.
Fear-mongering.
Fear, when you take fear and you're divisive and you put people against each other. Now, I'm not saying he's evil, and I want to make that very clear.
Yeah, he's not an evil guy, but he's using tools.
No, he's him. He is him. This is who Donald Trump is, for better or for worse. And the reason I'm saying that, I don't get political. I don't want people to think I'm against or for.
No, okay.
I'm just saying, what he's doing, all we have to recognize is that it's working and a lot of people are agreeing with it. When you have a lot of people agreeing with a statement like, most Muslims hate America. I'm not Muslim, I'm Christian.
Yeah.
When somebody comes out and says, most of them hate America, and I can tell you unequivocally, hands down, that's absolutely untrue.
Yeah.
To the extent that I am one of the biggest selling artists in the Middle East, predominantly Muslim area, and it's in English, that goes ahead and tells you there's, and I'm doing all my comedy in English, there's no way, that's proof in and of itself.
Yeah.
But the fact that he says that and a majority of people agree with it tells you it's not racism. Dismissing it as racism is a problem. It means it's a problem that needs to be dealt with. I like to think that what I'm doing is a good step counteracting that kind of information, because I'm a comedian who's American, grew up in America, lived in the Middle East, I've come back here, and people are like, yo, these... he's American. He has no problem. He's been in both places. He's talking to us. We understand this. We love his humor. So it's all good. And I always put the blame on us, because I think as the Middle East, as Arabs, we've had the worst PR in the world.
Okay.
If you were to do a course on what not to do in terms of PR, it would be everything we've done in the past 30, 40 years.
You're going to blame that on PR? I mean, like...
Yeah, no, I'm going to blame it on, we should have done stuff to counteract the when World Trade Center, when 9/11 happened, we didn't do nearly enough to counteract the negative, what happened. I mean, there were 11 Arabs on that plane. That's the end of the story.
Or at least, hey, that's not us, man.
I mean, obviously it's not us. Obviously he doesn't recommend it. Obviously there were 11 Saudi Arabians on the plane. Those are, Saudi Arabia is America's biggest ally in the Middle East. So, and then all of this could have easily been counteracted with simple export of culture. Because if you see what the Arabs are really about, you fall in love with it.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Especially Lebanese, for instance. But the problem is we're so divided in our own country. We have so many problems. We don't have the ability to also take care of what's going on outside.
If it helps, I love your food. Like,
the food is great.
Lebanese food is the shit.
And look at that. Lebanese food. You just said that. That's a great way of exporting
it. If it helps.
And now I hope you're going to love Lebanese comedy, and it'll help add to it as well.
Now, when you're over there, like, here's where I'm... All right, so now you're the first real stand-up comedy. So yes. Here's what I know. This is all I know. And I'm laying it on the table right now. Not figuratively. I don't want to come in. I'm laying it on the table. I know there's a lot of improv stuff in Lebanon. I know there's a lot of maybe like your one-man shows or whatever.
Yeah.
But you are like a first of the stand-up comedy, thus making you the Lebanese king of comedy.
Yeah.
So
there's nobody else at the moment who does like an hour and a half goes up on... It doesn't happen all across the Middle
East. Everything else is like sketch and improv.
It's sketches. Like they go up as troops. You'll have four or five like a comedy troupe. Not like troops as in war.
Yeah, I get it.
You'll have like four or five comedians on stage. And they're doing sketches. You know, like one guy's acting this role, the other person's that person, and then they do like a little mini play. Or if you have a one-man show, it's a one-man sketch where he does multiple characters or she does multiple characters.
Right.
So it's not stand-up comedy. They're telling jokes. They're not like doing a kind of thing. Is that
No, I'm good. Okay. Now, one thing I am interested in where I don't necessarily... I don't know whether the bite is. Like, why is sketch so big there and not stand-up? Because usually stand-up...
I'll tell you. It's a cultural thing. That's a great question.
Yeah, because stand-up is like, well, you got an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It's one guy. It's mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
And usually when that one guy or gal goes up and makes some, you know, jokes or what have mm-hmm. you could kind of sort of do that multiple times in a night. Meanwhile, the sketch is you're so team-dependent
mm-hmm.
where if one person falls off, that's it. We're done.
Well, I'll reverse what you just said.
Yeah,
it's harder to do stand up because if you screw up, there's nothing to fall back on. If mm-hmm. you're in a troupe, the reason that four or five people constantly do that, and even in comedy shows where everybody's doing 10-15 minutes, if one guy's bad, it's not bad enough that nobody else can recover it and bring the show back home. So Arabs are not risk takers. And in our culture, we don't like risk. So going up as a group of people works out very well over there because you're basically you're taking the risk and putting only one-fourth on yourself.
Okay.
So, yeah, if a group of comics, if one of them isn't doing too good, you got three other, four other people that can take up the trade. That's really why, even till now, I've been doing this for 10 years in the Middle East, and my shows are insanely popular. And there's a lot of stand-up comics now that are popping up all over the region. Nobody has yet to put out their own hour. My shows are like 2 hours and 20 minutes. I'm talking about you putting out an hour.
You're the Louis C.K. of Lebanon.
I'll leave that to you to make your opinion when you do shows. But I mean, it's just like nobody goes out and just puts themselves out there for that long because they're terrified. Whereas I'm not, because as far as I'm concerned, I'm excited. I'm like, I can't wait for people to hear my stupid jokes about this. And I just go up.
Now, is there, I got it. All right. I know we're talking about the Middle East a lot. Because you've done a lot to revolutionize just the landscape there.
Yeah.
But is there a culture shock when you come back to the U.S.?
No.
Like, what I mean by culture shock is, like, oh, word? You are, like, the hottest ticket over there. Then you come back here. Hey, man, we could probably squeeze you in. We got 10 minutes.
That's why I came. To be honest, I know people find it weird. I got so big in the Middle East that when I would get up on stage... People were booking. I mean, when you're selling out 4,000 seats or 5,000 or whatever, or even 500.
Got it.
The fact that you're selling them out that quick and people are in advance buying your tickets, they know what you're about. They're excited about you. They're preparing their life. When you get to that stage, I don't have opening acts, for instance. There aren't any opening acts. So I always just walk out on stage. We start the show. The warm-up has been done for you because people already love you and they already... So I started to feel in my last special that if I stayed in the Middle East only, that my craft would slightly dull down because I don't have to work as hard to keep the crowd on their toes. So I thought it would be exciting. This wasn't the main reason why I moved out at all, but I thought it was a big plus to be able to come to the U.S. and walk into a club from where I'm selling 4,000, 5,000 people, and then I walk into a club and the guy's like... you know, come in on Tuesday and we'll give you a shot for 3 minutes. And I loved that because it gave me the opportunity to prove myself and to make sure that I'm a funny comic.
Okay.
Not that I have the fame and I'm relying on it.
Got it. Okay, I get it.
And it worked out well.
It was your international reset button.
I wanted to hustle again.
Okay.
Like, I want to feel challenged every step of the way. It's like, you know, if you think about, like, ancient stories from Japan and whatever, where a samurai would go and travel and face different opponents so that he could keep improving on his skills. For me, I look at my stand-up comedy as a craft. If you take a look at my old shows and then you come watch a new show, there's a massive difference. It's evolved, and that's because I'm always challenging myself, and I always want to make sure I get better and I change and I evolve and I address different topics and I keep growing with everybody. I'm going for.
I get that. I mean, it's mind-blowing to me because I finally get a chance to talk to a person who has had that. I don't know if you've seen the documentary Searching for Sugar Man.
No, I haven't.
Okay. All right. Well, here in the D, in Detroit, it's on Netflix.
I'm going to check it out. Searching for Sugar Man.
Searching for Sugar Man.
I'm going to write that down now.
It's his cat. Sugar Man Rodriguez.
Okay.
Sugar Man Rodriguez. I'm giving a fast version, but it's a great documentary. You're the reverse of him.
Okay.
So, like, Searching for Sugar Man is like this. It was this dude, Sugar Man Rodriguez, in the 70s. He had one or two albums.
Wait, I know about this.
Yes, yes.
And like, he didn't even know he was famous in like South Africa.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
and then like, they came and they told him like, "Bro, you're in."
But like, it was 20 years later.
Yes,
they found
you're
him
the
like
second person to recommend that to.
They're
me
like, he's on a bus.
Yeah,
and they were just like, "Hey, I don't know if you know this or not, but you're like Elvis of South Africa."
Yeah.
And he was just like, "Oh well, fuck this.
Yeah,
I'm going to South Africa."
Best story I heard. Somebody told me it, and I'm definitely going to watch
it. And like now he's like praised.
Yeah.
Whenever he goes, so
and wasn't even appreciated here.
So like, you're the reverse because you had this fame and fortune, and you probably.
I
couldn't even walk down the street because of your comedy, or you're always getting recognized, or like, oh,
the wonderful thing. The wonderful thing about being Arab is you're with a bunch of people that are all in their own heart and soul, and they deserve to be VIPs.
Okay.
So whenever I walk down the street, I'm always recognized, but I'm never hassled because they're like, "Hey, Nimmer, we love your," you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I am hassled. I've never been hassled. The most people ask us for is a picture, but I've never had a problem.
Okay.
But the nice thing about leaving the Middle East and coming here is it gave me the opportunity to, the way I like to describe it is like a video game, I'm leveling up. So in my first few levels, it was Lebanon, and I won the boss battle there. And then I went on to level number 2, which was the Middle East, and I won the boss battle there.
Oh, you are perfect for this show.
And now level 3, I'm in the U.S., and it's like you're getting closer to, and the more, and it's like a video game, because the further I go along, the harder the enemies get. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The harder the challenges. And now that I'm in the U.S., it's like the big boss battle. I'm competing against other comics, and I'm competing against, you know, having to draw people into shows and establish my name and be likable to my people, Americans as well as Arabs. But the payoff is I could end up having done something nobody has done before, which is what I fully intend to do, which is bring the world together.
Now, I've never seen anyone offer their plans of world domination on this show. But
well, I don't want to dominate it. I want to bring it together so we can celebrate together.
But if you a guy, I mean, like,
look, I'm not Donald Trump.
Look, I brought it together, but, you know.
I'll tell you what my goal is. I will declare it on this podcast. In 4 or 5 years, this is my goal. This is what drives me.
Okay.
And I hope I can meet this timeline. In 4 or 5 years, I want to sell out a massive, say, Madison Square Garden or any place.
Mm-hmm.
But the part of the goal that's very intricate isn't to sell it out. It's to sell it out with a crowd that is full of Americans, Arab Americans, Asian Americans, European American, everybody from everywhere, with or without the American moniker even. Tourists, everyone. And I want to film that show, and I want to broadcast it around the world live on the internet, and I want people to tune in all over the globe. So my brand has to be big enough that people all over the globe know about it and watch it for free, because I want that to be the instance where, for one night, the entire world laughed together at the same jokes. Nothing will remind people that we have more in common than that, in my opinion.
All right. Now,
that's what I'm going
That's
for.
Your five-year plan.
That's my five-year plan.
In year 6, where are you going? Antarctica? You're going to be the funniest dude.
Year 6, I learned Japanese, and we're going to Japan.
Year 6.
Get those Asians on board.
Hey, what countries don't have internet access?
Internet access.
India. Right, we're going there.
Here I come.
We're going rural. There.
Not even India. Look at me. India has some of the best internet access.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Some of the rural areas in India I'm going to go for.
And I feel that's cool because, like, you're a person, like you said, your mantra, no politics.
No religion.
No religion. It's
one
all
love.
One love.
Yeah.
Now, Middle East, India has that too. There are even, like, the politics are so, I don't want to make this like, oh, because this is the most I've ever talked about politics.
Go ahead, man.
But like,
please.
The politics there are so to the point where even media itself is like.
Controlled.
So, is there a way where, I guess what I'm saying is, usually stand up when you're on stage, it's your own thing, but you're going to countries where, like, there's, like, Sharia law, and you can't say, or you can't...
100%, like Saudi Arabia, for instance.
Yeah, I would imagine that affects your act.
Yes.
But, is there a thing where you just kind of, like, no, or have you ever gotten in trouble for that? Or?
I haven't gotten in trouble because so far, I've been very wise, and then when you avoid politics and religion, there's very little you can do to offend even Sharia law.
Yeah.
Okay, because unless I'm going up. Now, to go up in Saudi Arabia, which is a highly conservative country, and to do a show where I'm talking about, if I was a vulgar comic, it'd be impossible. Luckily, I'm not. Yeah. So it's not difficult for me. So what I would end up changing if I go to Saudi Arabia in my act is very, very little. Because what I'm talking about is lots of stuff that everybody experiences. Now, in Lebanon, I can be a lot more liberal. And in Saudi Arabia, I can be less liberal. That's true. But the point of the matter is, I'm not going to these countries, especially like Saudi Arabia, or let's say to other countries around the Middle East. Saudi Arabia is definitely the most conservative example. Or Kuwait, where, for instance, I was told you can't even do a set where you say, "So I was talking to this girl." Ooh. You get what I'm saying? Like, I can't say I was dating. You can't have a girlfriend. You can only have a wife. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that was a thing that was put on me, right?
Uh-huh.
So instead of me giving in to that, And changing the subjects to the wall, I just omitted the sets of the relationship because what I wanted to do was to help push the narrative of free expression. And you know, I always give this example. If you go into, you're a married man.
Yeah.
The first time you met your lovely wife's parents, I doubt that you walked into their house and were like, "Yo, man, what's going on?"
You
probably walked in a very, very, very clean and very professional version of yourself.
Yeah, it was the best version of me.
The best version of yourself.
Yeah, I get
it. And slowly, over time, as they got to know you and love you and understand who you are, you became more liberal with what you would say.
Got it.
Because at that point, they understood where you're coming from. So for me to walk into Saudi Arabia and immediately be like, just firing left, right, and center would have been a disaster. What I've done, and the reason that I can say stuff that no other comic can say all over the Middle East, is I've taken my time to win over the respect of most of the people there so that they know what I'm about. And when you're coming to a show for Nimmer, you know what it's about. And now I can say stuff that nobody... I've said stuff on stages in Jordan that nobody's ever said. And that is... I'm very proud of that because there's the purpose. I'm helping show people that you can be angry and you can say stuff without resorting to violence and make a change.
Now, here's one thing that we have no knowledge of, and you're our guy right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're our guy. Like,
tell me anything. I can say anything. You'll believe it is great. Let's go.
Yeah, I know.
Let's go.
I know. Of like, you know, those like rumors, because I don't know. I don't live over there. Like Saudi Prince, or they're just like, "Oh yeah, we need Madonna for like a night, and like we'll pay you blah blah blah." Have like any offers come from Nimmer? Like, "Hey, Saudi Prince," or you don't even have to be Saudi. You could be a prince of royalty.
I'll tell you hands down, and I can say this, and I'm very proud of this. There's two parts to that story. That's true. That happens. They bring in huge artists just like that because they can.
And it's like one night only for their family, and that's it.
Of course. They fly their own private jumbo jets, and they're only six people. So it's all true. And this is mad moral corruption.
Uh-huh.
It's mad corruption because of the soul. But it is what it is.
Okay.
What I've done in all of my shows, and I'm very proud of this, is I've never allowed ticket prices to get to the point where they're unaffordable for the masses. So even in my show in Lebanon right now, there's $25 or $30 tickets.
Okay.
In Saudi Arabia, I always make sure. So there's different types of avenues you can take. My image has never been catering to the highest bidder. It's always been catering to the most people. I even do movies where I do my special. I'll turn it into a movie. I pay a fortune. We do the best sound, the best video experience. It's a full-on film. Release it in cinemas so that people who can't even afford a ticket with them and their girlfriend, because if you're putting $20, you and your girlfriend, that's $40, and then you got to pay parking. You got even at $20. But if you want,
that
like,
goes up, yeah.
And you might not get a good seat. I make the movie so that for like $10. You can get a great seat with popcorn, have a great time, and enjoy the experience. It's important for me to everybody to see it. Have I been offered stuff like that, Saudi princes and stuff like that? Yes, I have. I'm not interested. It doesn't further my purpose at all. Although I will say, and I'm not going to lie about this, early on in my career, I did get an offer to do a mall.
Uh-huh.
Like, they were like, "Come to the mall, and it's the opening of the mall. We want you to in a way, kind of like..."
Yeah?
Is everything...
Yeah, like we want you to come to the mall. We want you to come to the mall and just stand in the middle of the mall and do stand up. It's a disaster. People walking by.
Yeah, that's like the worst.
And I was like, no. But instead of saying no, I don't like to say no. I gave them like a ridiculous price, and they were like, okay. And let me tell you, I stood in that mall.
I delivered. I stood at more.
Let me tell you.
And I gave them the best hour
of my life, and nobody heard it, and I don't care.
Yeah, it's like one of the worst places to do. Like,
I'll do a private, definitely private events, like corporate events, I will do. I've done that, but I never get asked to do the really expensive stuff because my image hasn't become an exclusive one. They're not interested in me. I'm not Madonna.
Yeah.
I'm not Freddie Mercury. I'm very.
Wait, popular. Wait. They got Freddie Mercury over there?
No, they got versions of like the Arab. You can go to the Middle East, and there's like these artists that have these amazing.
So that whole dying thing was a hoax.
Yeah.
Freddie Mercury. Yes. God, I'm trying to remember.
Well, Freddie Mercury is Iranian. I don't know if you know that.
Well, yeah, but
so technically,
what did he do? He just. I know they can't hear me, but it was a guy that came to the side. I can't remember. Please look his name.
What are you? Are you putting videos of me during the podcast? Shut up, bro.
Like,
bro, I'm telling you, man. He's like my mom. He's like a mother.
Like now, we're talking to the guy. I'm looking at him this way. I'm looking at him that way.
Please, bro, please. We need. It's the
struggle. Here's what I'll do. Here's what I'll do.
Bro, Sheila, I'm just shaking on the
ghalat ktir. Here's what I'll do.
Thank you.
Just to appease him at the top.
Yeah.
We were talking about Eye of the Tiger before we got on mic.
Yeah.
I will put if it's cool with you at the top of this podcast.
Yeah.
A clip of Eye of the Tiger. Is that cool?
If you want to. All right,
we good. I got the thumbs up.
No, I'll tell you what. I'll give you a clip because I hate that show.
Why?
Yeah, can you believe that?
Why? That was like your Big Bang.
People love that show. Everybody loves it, and they even loved the show before it. This is why I'm hot because. I'm so critical of myself, and that was early on in my career.
Well, you got to think. Okay, all right. As a person who's super critical about my work, like this podcast, I have never listened to a podcast.
Isn't it? It's torture.
Like, I made it, I want to say 5 minutes, and I couldn't. I just couldn't. Because whatever.
It takes me like a year and a half to put out a special that I filmed because I edit my own stuff and I do the audio.
And that's me. After editing.
It hurts.
And not even the edit. The editor is usually a quick run through. We got to talk about whatever ads we got that week. And after that, I don't want to touch it. I never go back and listen to it. So I would imagine. You know what? I'm with you on that. The reason I use Eye of the Tiger is because I talk to a lot of comedians. And sometimes they don't want to put the new stuff up. Because
I have the Tiger material. And then I got Epic after that I put out. And I even cringe watching that. And then there's Victoria's Secret, which I put out. I cringe watching that. And then I did UFO, which I didn't film. And now there's this special. And it's just, I don't think I'll ever be happy with anything I've ever done. But I'm very proud, of course, of Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah.
I think it's done. But I'll give you a more recent clip if you want.
That was I'm critical of what I do. I think I will enjoy it, just not now.
Maybe.
Like, yeah. I will enjoy
in the moment later.
I need someone else.
I'll tell you when I do enjoy it, when people like you come up and say, I love that show or something. Yeah. At that moment, I'm just like, damn, that's amazing.
Well, you left a country where you're like the greatest stand-up. You are the king of comedy.
It's easy because I'm the only one, too.
So, wait. If I go to Lebanon, and I got a tight five, I can rival your throne.
Of 100%.
Since you're the only one.
And I will crush you. No, I'm just kidding.
I can rival you.
I will crush you. Like a, no.
Like, I can work on a tight five, get a helmet, you know, just go over there.
At this moment, if you go into the Middle East with a tight 20 minutes, I'm serious about this, you could build up from it. And things could happen because there needs to be competition to Nimr. Like, there's a lot of 20-minute people across the Middle East. I'm still waiting and I'm begging and I'm hoping and I'm praying for the day that somebody comes out with an hour and a half. It needs to happen.
Okay.
The industry needs to get furthered by this.
All right. Super EP, right next to you, my wife, Tasha. Mm-hmm. Write this down. Reality TV show. The next top comic out of Lebanon. Hey, you can be on the panel, Nimr. I would hope.
Wow. he wants to be the you know the rogue element in the reality show.
Yeah, I'll be the guy. No, I know. But
Lebanon, what's funny on a map, are the country is so small. The word Lebanon is actually in the ocean. on the map. So we don't. It's not. You know, like the sea, the Mediterranean Sea. Like, it's not that far, actually. Well, we're closer to Africa than we are to the U.S.
Well, let's rewind a little bit. I know we go Tarantino style on this podcast.
Yeah, by the way, yeah. And then he died. But let's go back.
Yeah. But here's the deal. If you are hoping and wishing for more Lebanese comics to at least rival your throne.
Lebanese, Jordanian, Palestinian, Saudi Arabian, Qatari, any. I want more comics all across the region.
Okay.
With specials. There are comics, and they're great, who are killing it with their 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and doing all these private events and public events as part of a gang of different comics, but I want it to be, I want the hour and a half. I want somebody to stand up and say, this is who I am to the world.
Now, I guess what I'm trying to say is, who's the guy who influenced you?
Oh, man.
Who's the guy or gal who was just like, you know what?
It was the guy.
Who was it?
When I was in San Diego. Dana Carvey.
Wait, all of this is because of Garth?
All of this is because of
Garth. Garth, hell, Garth.
Garth as a stand-up comic before Wayne's World.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. All
so
right.
So when I was a kid, when I first came to the U.S., I was a toddler. I was a child.
Yeah.
And it was a dark time. And all I remember is I don't remember good things. You know, I don't remember much. I just don't remember. Nobody was really happy. When you're forced to flee your family and your country, it's not usually a fun time.
Got it.
We didn't leave as refugees. We came. We had a house. We had everything. It was totally cool. We flew over. We had paperwork. It wasn't like an emergency situation.
Right.
So it wasn't as bad. And I feel so bad about this as Syrian people right now. No, not at all. Like, my dad was able to. We had the ability to make a clean exit. It was still very sad because you left a lot behind and you're leaving it knowing that your house is being blown up and a lot of stuff is going down.
Right.
When we came here, my earliest good memory was my parents laughing uncontrollably. And I walked into their room. This was when I was about 4 years old. And they were watching stand-up comedy, an HBO special. And at the time, I believe it was, if I'm not mistaken, Bill Cosby himself. If I'm not mistaken.
Look, man. Look, look.
Which at the moment I know is not. But it is what it is. It's the truth. You know what I'm saying?
Regardless,
I know.
Regardless of whatever you got to say about Cosby, that doesn't take that show being less funny.
No, no, no. I'm not going to mull over the facts because I've said this on record before.
Yeah.
And it is what it is. And you know what? If it turns out
I laughed. Look, I can't retroactively laugh.
Everybody loved Cosby up until everything.
I still love Cosby on stage. Cosby is the shit.
Bro,
Cosby
you don't
is the
need
shit.
To, I'll tell
on
you.
On stage.
If you were to take the guy's skills as a comic, they're in some of the best ever.
Now, off stage, that's...
Off stage?
That, hey.
No comment.
Hey. I think I'm the only female that makes jokes out of the whole thing. Like, I think I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't do it. I didn't see him do it. I don't know.
I have enough controversy in the Middle East that I don't know enough about. So when I come out here and I see this going on, all I'll say about Cosby is that...
It was funny.
I hope that this whole issue gets resolved with something on the record proven. Do you know what I'm saying? I feel terrible for any woman or for Cosby in any situation where anybody might be misstating something and character assassination on either side.
Hey,
you know
I'm not going to lie. I still have the... VHS, mm-hmm. I know, of Bill Cosby himself.
There you go.
Still in my house.
No, of course. I mean,
it's still funny.
I have the records of Cosby. Look, this is... to deny his contribution to comedy is ridiculous. And at this point, like in this example, my parents were watching Cosby. My dad had never watched stand-up comedy in his life.
Okay.
My mom had because she grew up in London. And they were laughing so... My dad was in tears. For him, this was like, this is... And I think that might be a very strong positive association for me why I wanted to become a comic. Because ever since then, I would tell people, I'm going to be a stand-up comic. And shortly thereafter, they started recording on VHS these HBO comedy specials where Dana Carvey would host, and he would bring up a bunch of comics.
And I vaguely remember
that. I don't know what it was called. All I do remember is there was this one set that Dana Carvey did where while he was hosting in between the comics, where he talked about George Bush Sr. when he went to Japan and threw up over, or China, I can't remember, no, Japan, threw up
Japan.
Over the Japanese
now
president.
Now that I remember, yeah, it was Japan.
Or the Chinese president. I'm a bit fuzzy on the details. I memorized that set when I was like 4 and a half, and I would just go around repeating it everywhere and constantly saying, one day I'm going to be either a Ninja Turtle or a stand-up comic all the time. That was all I kept saying, and I haven't given up on the Ninja Turtle.
I mean, you still...
You didn't either?
Hell, you got the height.
That was my first Halloween costume.
Ninja?
Which, Leonardo, Raphael, Michelangelo?
It was so long.
Okay. Right now, if you had to choose, who'd you choose from the four? I like them all too. It's difficult, but I'm saying, so when that happened,
you
and
know,
then,
you still could. You got the height,
bro. I'm down. I just need a shell. And here's the thing, and a chest plate, a shell and a chest plate. Here's the thing. So we started Dana Carvey, and then as I grew up, and I always liked to make people laugh the whole time. I found these cassette tapes that my mom had of like Woody Allen doing stand up and Steve Martin doing stand up, and she would record them off BBC Radio back when she was in London, like old stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
Wild and crazy guy.
Yeah, and I started listening to him. So all of this was influenced me, and I started doing stand-up. The thing that helped a lot was the internet, because the internet, you know, YouTube and all that, I started seeing Pablo Francisco, I started seeing all these comics, Louis Black, and all these comics, Comedy Central specials that I could download off the internet and watch, because I never had comics to riff off of, like, in person. Yeah, I never could go to the comedy club and watch. Up until very recently, I had never been in an actual comedy club. I was super famous as a stand-up comic, never stepped foot in my life in an actual comedy club. And seen other comics perform. It was all this kind of a situation. So that's why even coming here was exciting, to be in clubs and starting from the bottom. I wanted that experience.
Now, like, we keep jumping back, but now you're here.
Yes.
You're on a world tour.
Yes.
You are fighting for stage time and I'm being generous, but I'm saying compared to where you were in the Middle East, you're fighting for stage time. Yes. You're fighting the big bosses now. Yes. Where people are going for the throne, I guess.
Yes.
Somewhere overseas, they're going for the throne. Right now, you find yourself. Are you finding any challenges, or is it like you look at all the challenges? Like,
I'm telling you, look,
these are first world problems.
These are first world problems. I mean, I can't even begin to complain. What am I going to complain about? I have other comics. That's my issue. Not that I'm doing a show. And a month before the show goes on, ISIS is blowing up multiple people in hotels and killing my countrymen, and I need to get them to buy tickets to my show. No, my challenge is other comics.
And nachos.
And you know what I'm saying? Like,
nachos
that,
and check
there
spots.
You go. So, and then honestly, I respect the process, because I appreciate going to a club and seeing people having to compete not just on the comedy chops, but their PR chops and their networking chops. And, you know, the beautiful thing about the comedy scene here is that it can be brutal, but it's still civil. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm good with that. I'm fine. And what am I going to say? I mean, I have to be very grateful. I've only been here a year and a half, and I'm already doing a U.S. tour. Things have moved very positively and fast for me, which only goes to tell you that if you're good enough, you will make it. It's not like there's going to be something that it doesn't matter if you're good enough or what. What I love about stand-up comedy, it doesn't matter if you're black, you're white, you're a woman, you're a man. It doesn't matter. You're funny.
That's it.
You catapult. And that is why it's such a noble and fantastic art form.
Man, I love having you on the show. We exceeded the time a lot.
Oh, really?
Sorry about that. You know what? No, it's all good. No, because we were told one thing, and I didn't want to, you know, because I know you got a lot of stuff to do.
Saturday today was literally a free day.
So cool. It was our free day, too.
Perfect.
And you fit the time of the show. Show's usually about an hour.
Okay.
So we're usually at that time, and I'll give you a little inside baseball.
Okay.
I didn't use any of my questions on my notes.
If you want, you can rapid fire them if you want to get
really
them done
don't.
With. Okay.
Because usually that's the sign of a good podcast.
Okay.
If I'm looking at my notes and I'm just reading off questions,
Yeah. How was it in the Middle East? Difficult.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, if I'm using my notes, I'm just kind of like fishing.
Yeah,
or
for
stuff like
trying
that.
To find.
But like, dude,
we had a conversation.
I felt it, and that's what this show is about. It's just a conversation.
Yeah.
And I felt it on the way here. And when I was doing my research, I was like, this guy.
Thanks,
is
man.
Something else.
I appreciate
man.
That
because I don't know. Like I said, it's ignorance because on my part, because I don't know how to encounter a guy like you. Because
that's not ignorance. I'll take that as a compliment. There isn't a guy like me that comes around every day, so it's good.
Yeah, it's
and it would be so weird for me to assume. I've done so many radio shows and TV interviews and podcasts in the past like month and a half.
Yeah,
and nobody knows anything, you know. And I've been asked on the radio like, sit low. So listen, when you hear what Donald Trump says, as a Muslim, how do you feel? And I say, well, I'm not Muslim. And they're like, oh, we're sorry. And I'm like, don't apologize. I would love being Muslim, Christian. It's all Jewish. I don't mind. It's not. I'm just saying. And they would be like, but aren't you an Arab? And that's not ignorance. I say that 100,000 times. We haven't put out a Seinfeld. We haven't put out a Forrest Gump. We haven't put out a single movie, TV show, or any form of media whatsoever that's reached out to other people across continents. We've only taken care of ourselves. So what do we expect? And I say this in a show. I'm like, do you expect the average American who wakes up at 6 in the morning puts their kids on a school bus, goes to work, hustles and grinds, and then is under the threat of losing their job and the economy and all this stuff. By the time they get back home, they're exhausted, and their kids are, like, terrible most of the time, and they don't respect them until a certain age.
Yeah.
And then you have to deal with that, and they come back home, and then you have to argue with them. They did some stupid shit at school, and then you put them to bed, and at that time, it's like 8 in the evening, you're exhausted. What do you expect that at that moment, the average American is going to get on Google, open the computer, and say, let's understand the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. And if it does, that's only a testament and positive credit bonus to any American who does that. But we have a responsibility.
See, that, I get a bonus.
100%. We have a responsibility to make sure that if we want people to know what we're really about, you need to tell people. That's the bottom line. And I hope that my comedy doesn't tell people what the Arabs are about. It tells people what the Arabs know. As the oldest civilization, one of the oldest civilizations in the world, we know unequivocally for a fact that we are all one. End of story, man. You go back genetically, we're all one. Phoenicians were the first people to discover America thousands of years before Christopher Columbus, and they did trade with the Americans who were the Native Americans, and we went back. We are a people who are about reaching out. We are a people about uniting the world. That's what we are. That's why you have Muslims, Christians, Jews. Yo, it's the birthplace of religion. We have to bring it back.
Man, like I said, this has been a great podcast. You're crushing it on the knowledge front.
Thank you, man.
Funny as shit.
I appreciate it,
brother. One more time, your social media info, please.
Hit me up on any social network, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, and my website, and YouTube, and it's all Nimmer Comedy, N-E-M-R Comedy, and my website, nimmercomedy.com, is the best place to go, because you can click on all of it from there.
And like I said, I will personally put that up on Facebook.
Thank you, man.
All of our social
media. I really appreciate
stuff.
It. This was one of the best, actually, this was the funnest podcast I've done so far, so thank
I
you.
I will quote you on
thank
that.
Thank you. Yes, it was, 100%.
I will quote you on that.
Quote and, me on that.
Let me do my thing. As always, you can catch us every week. SamShowNation.com is our website. Twitter, SamShow11 on Twitter. You can talk to me personally. I will answer whatever questions. Facebook, Just Talk With Sam. Instagram, Just Talk With Sam. And we see you guys next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you.